Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I hope the audio is okay. I can't hear a thing. Anyway, I'm on. I can hear myself just fine. My guest is Larry Pinkney. Larry has been on before. It's great to have Larry back. Larry, there's so much going on, and of course the Ukraine story is still the major one. I simply am obsessed with it. I can't stop writing about it. I lose count of how many articles I've written about it, but in recent days I've written at least one article daily. Lots of days I've written two articles. A few days I've written three articles, and I plan two more for tomorrow.
Wow. Wow. That's great.
Well, I wish, as I'm sure you do, Larry, that the situation wasn't as grave as it is, and it's extremely grave with new reports of the Ukrainian military attacking civilians in eastern Ukraine, attacking civilians. Russia has said, Vladimir Putin, the foreign minister, I'm sorry, Vladimir Putin, the president, and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who I am doing a special article about tomorrow. He really is a consummate diplomat. There's nobody around I know that matches him. He really is very, very special, and I felt it was time to honor him, and I'm doing it in an article that I'll put out tomorrow, and I call him what he is, a consummate diplomat. Well, he and Vladimir Putin have both said that Russia will not allow Russian nationals to go unprotected. Well, I think they have an obligation to protect them. Just imagine if there were thousands, tens of thousands of Americans in a foreign country being attacked by the military of that country. Larry, can you imagine that Washington would just stand by and do nothing? I don't think there's one chance in a million that would happen.
Well, you know, Stephen, first of all, let me thank you. It is always a great honor and pleasure and a real comradely privilege to be on your show on Progressive Radio Network. And having said that, let me just shoot right to the heart of what you just said, all right? The bottom line is that you remember back in the day, about 20 years or so ago, when the Reagan administration made up this lie with regards to the tiny nation of Grenada. Remember that?
Oh, I sure do.
How the Reagan administration said, the Reagan regime, I should say, said that, there were a few Americans, and we're talking about a few, we're talking about a very few. We're not talking about 1,000 or 100. We're talking about perhaps maybe 10 or 20, which was how they put it. But in any event, who were quote-unquote in danger in the tiny island nation of Grenada, okay, and Reagan decided to invade Grenada, murder its leaders, et cetera, murder many, many people. You know, this pales by comparison to what is happening in Ukraine and in Russia. And I say and in Russia because we're talking about the very borders of Russia. We're talking about NATO, that is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, actually moving in constantly and consistently on the borders of Russia. Now, obviously, common sense indicates that, you know, Putin has no choice but to defend the rights not only of the Russian people. It's not just about the Russian people. It's about the rights of the everyday ordinary people who want to have control of their own government. But instead, the United States and its EU, i.e., okay, European Union backers are supporting the fascists. And I used the word fascists, and I used it deliberately because that's what they are. They're neo-Nazis. That's who they put in charge of their puppet government in Ukraine. Now, I think the entire rest of the world, knows that, sees that for what it is, all right? But here in this country, in the United States, our corporate stream media, our lamestream corporate stream media, gives us no information. You know, I've been watching no substantive information. Oh, they give us plenty of vomit, but no real substantive information. Now, I've been watching a number of different international media outlets, including Press TV, including Russia Today, I can go on and on. I've been watching at least six or seven different international outlets. And it's crystal clear with Barack Obama and his minions, okay, are doing. And they're carrying us and deliberately doing so to the brink of thermonuclear war. But even besides that, the reality is that what in the hell is the United States doing, you know, well over 10 to 12,000 miles away on the other side of the planet, interfering, as it always does and has done historically, in the struggle for everyday ordinary people? And it's not on behalf of them, it's against everyday ordinary struggling people. Whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Iran, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Palestine, whether it's Venezuela, this is what the Barack Obama regime has been about and is still very, very adamantly and vehemently about. So I have to go back to what I initially said and reiterate the fact that all of us, we have to understand this for what it is. It is an imperialistic attack by the United States and the EU, and more specifically the United States and NATO, to do everything it can to essentially destroy any possibility of everyday ordinary people determining, or what we call self-determination, determining their own rights in their own country, having control over their own resources. This is what this is about. So I'll just keep quiet for now. I just had to say that, my brother, and thank you for having me on the program today.
Oh, you said important things, Larry. Let me go back just briefly to August of 2008. How well I remember it. I wrote an article about what happened, and for the first time I got invited on Russian television. I don't remember which one. It wasn't RT. It wasn't Voice of Russia. It was a Russian TV channel, and I honestly don't know which one it was, but they invited me on and gave me 30 minutes, the longest interview I've had on Russian television, the first one and the longest one, and it was to talk about the Georgian invasion of South Ossetia that Russia intervened in. It did so responsibly to protect Russian nationals. There were many, many, a sizable portion of the South Ossetian Russian of the South Ossetian population are Russian citizens. The area was part of the Soviet Union before it dissolved. And Russia waited a number of days. There were 1,700 people murdered by the Georgian forces sent in by the U.S. stooge, so-called President Saakashvili, Mikhail Saakashvili, literally a U.S.-installed stooge, and Washington, George Bush, was the one who unleashed him to attack the people in South Ossetia. And it was Dmitry Medvedev who was president of the time. And if I remember, it happened during the time of the Chinese Olympics. And Vladimir Putin, who was prime minister then, was in Beijing for the Olympics. And Medvedev, or maybe Medvedev was there, I may have that backwards, but one of them was there. And this was the timing, you know, with the Olympics going on, with Russia involved in the Olympics, the distraction factor, Larry, you know that. Just like when the administration reports bad news, but it doesn't want it during a prime time period. It does it very late on a Friday afternoon, so it'll show up in weekend newscasts, and very few people will see it compared to what they would see and be aware of if it happened during the week. I mean, that's the dirty game. So they did that, and Russia responsibly intervened in about a week, routed the Georgian forces, restored a peaceful situation, and had I been the president of Russia, I would have done exactly the same thing. I wouldn't have waited a few days. I might have waited a few hours, but once I understood what was going on, it's very easy to do that by satellite, by overflights, any way that you have to do it. Very simple to see what's going on. I mean, people were literally being murdered by the hundreds in cold blood. I would have acted immediately. And of course, the issue for Russia is its own nationals, but it's also the issue of protecting people who otherwise would be massacred. And that's exactly what was going on. So this is the situation in Ukraine now. It hasn't risen to the stage of a massacre. But what's gone on yesterday and today, and you literally, I can write something, Larry, and an hour later I have got to go back and revise it because there's something new happening, and I know when I wake up in the morning what I wrote the day before, and I'm going to get that article out. I'm not going to go back and rewrite it again. But literally, I mean, this is a moving story, like a soap opera that doesn't continue from day to day. It can continue from hour to hour, and the news is almost always bad.
Yes, and the fact is, I want to reiterate both your point and my point. The United States is always on the side of the those who would take away the human rights, if you will, of the people. You see, but it portrays itself. The United States portrays itself as being on the side of "quote unquote," the people. When in reality, we have a power elite in this nation that controls not only the people, everyday ordinary people of this nation, or at least doesn't really control the people so much as it controls the information that's fed to the people, but it controls the lamestream, corporate stream, vomit stream. News media, in heavy quotation marks, news of this nation. And so when we look at whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Venezuela, whether it's Iran, whether it's Afghanistan, the fact of the matter is that we are fed nonsense. We are fed vomit. And we need to understand that not only does this apply externally, that is to say with imperialistic U.S. policy or as it relates to the imperialistic U.S. policy, but it also applies internally within the United States itself. The absolute nonsense, the absolute lies, lie after lie after lie after lie that we get from Barack Obama and Biden and Holder and Susan Rice at the United Nations, all of these people, we get nothing but lies. And it's time for the people in this nation, not only throughout Mother Earth, but particularly in this nation, to understand that at stake is our own security. You know, Russia right now is attempting to deal with its security in terms of on its own borders. NATO, Barack Obama in this particular point in time historically, has gone back on the promises. Of course, he goes back on all of his promises. They're lies. They're lies. But, you know, NATO had said it would not expand. But, of course, NATO, the North Atlantic, so-called North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is all about expansion. It's all about imperialism. That's what it's about. It's about trying to dominate. And we need to understand that. But that's external. Let's also relate the external to the internal, because that's why ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, all of them, Fox, all of them are mouthpieces for this phony, fake, left-right, Republicrat, so-called Democrat and Republican Party, Republicrat nonsense, vomit that we get. So Ukraine, as it stands today in April 2014, is not only important for the people of Ukraine and the people of Russia and really Eastern Europe as a whole and Europe as a whole, but it's really important to the people of Europe totally and I repeat, and the people of the United States, because they're doing the same thing here. They're just doing it on a little gentler scale, to use the words of that war criminal, George W. Bush.
Oh, indeed. So, Larry, let me point out one thing that the New York Times, you know, the venerable New York Times, all the news that's fit to print, and I like to say all the news they call fit to print isn't fit to read. It's garbage. It's rubbish. And they were caught red-handed. Oh, it was so lovely, Larry. Absolutely lovely. A couple of days ago, they published a story citing fake photographs of masked professional-looking men, a gunman, I think they said, gunmen in eastern Ukraine, identified as Russian elements, you know, stirring up mischief, the ones behind what's going on in eastern Ukraine. Russian gunmen. Well, they were caught red-handed in a bald-faced lie, because clear evidence came out in about 24 hours showing the photos were fake. They had nothing to do with what's going on in eastern Ukraine. And the Times published a follow-up article. I mean, they literally had egg on their face, and it was very obvious, and they couldn't get around it. And they published a follow-up article. But instead of admitting the error they made, well, they did admit the error they made, but they buried it deep, many paragraphs into an article that they wrote. And the way people read articles in newspapers, whether they do it online or they do it in their dailies that they get, they'll read the first paragraph, two or three, maybe a few more, and they don't go on. And if it's a long article, a very small percentage of them read the whole thing. You know, they scan the newspaper. They don't read stuff the way anybody does if they're researching for information. So if, I don't know, out of 100 people who may have read the article, I doubt more than a handful, 3, 4, 5, half a dozen, got down deep into the article to read a very short statement that, oh, indeed, these photographs appear not to have been legitimate. Those weren't the words the Times used, but that was the inference from what they said. But again, they were caught in a bald-faced lie. They didn't do their due diligence. They never do their due diligence. They regurgitate official lies, and they publish them like they're gospel, and of course they're not.
Right, right. And that, of course, is what since we're talking about the New York Times, that's an example, that's precisely what this corporate stream media does. And then they, as you pointed out so adroitly, so skillfully, Stephen, that, you know, they bury the most important information. They bury it, assuming they show it at all, that they write about it at all. If they do, they bury it deep into an article to ensure that everyday ordinary people will not see it. They'll skim over it, won't even see it. And you know, this is not news. This is nothing but straight up propaganda. This would make Goebbels and Goering of the infamous Third Reich green with envy. What we have in this country, what we're in this country, meaning the United States, what we have is a situation whereby U.S. the people in the United States are kept deaf, dumb, and blind. Look at American Idol. Look at Oprah. Look at this. Look at that. Look at all the new shows we're going to put on. Let's, you know, feed the people for I like to call it the Roman circuses. In other words, let's keep the people's minds off of what is really happening. Even though every single day in this country, foreclosures are increasing. Police brutality is increasing. The government has destroyed virtually both the Second and the Fourth, especially the Fourth Amendments, you know, with Constitution, U.S. Constitutional Amendments. You know, we have to understand that what is happening in Ukraine, all right, and in other parts of this world, on the part of the United States NSA, on the part of the United States CIA, on the part of the United States FBI, it's happening to us here in the United States. And we have to be cognizant of this. We must be aware that our very lives and our human rights, our constitutional rights, et cetera, are at stake. And this Obama regime, I refuse to even call it an administration because it's a regime, all right? This Obama regime is deep about the business of destroying, dumbing down the consciousness of everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people in this nation, and if possible, throughout Mother Earth. So, you know, I look at Ukraine, and I say strongly, may the people of Ukraine, the everyday, ordinary people, not the neo-Nazi fascists, but the everyday ordinary people who are struggling to survive in Ukraine, may they be triumphant against this vicious, hypocritical, lying empire of the United States. And may the people here in the United States be triumphant against the government who is absolutely opposed to the will and the needs of the people in this country.
Well, Larry, I certainly echo that sentiment very, very strongly. It could be. It really amazes me, Larry, that the people of eastern Ukraine have shown so much courage. In one of my articles for tomorrow, I'm including information put out, this comes from satellite information, I'm sure, information coming out from Russia's defense minister, saying Ukraine mobilized against the people of eastern Ukraine, something on the order of, if I remember the numbers, 11,000 troops, 160 tanks, about 150 artillery pieces, about 250 armored personnel carriers, and in addition to that, they've deployed Blackwater-type hired killers, not thousands of them. I wrote a couple of articles that were 150 that were sent over to Ukraine. They landed in Kiev. I don't have any other information on where they were sent, but obviously they were sent to eastern Ukraine to stir up mischief, and I repeat again, these people are hired killers, trained killers. They come from U.S. Special Forces, from the Special Forces of other countries, and they literally are experts in the art of killing. And these are the people that have gone over. Wherever they go, death follows them. There's no question, and they operate with impunity. Besides that, the so-called right sector of Ukraine is an overt neo-Nazi party, complete with insignia, Heil Hitlers, Iron Crosses, Celtic Crosses, on and on and on. These people, and the statements they make, one of the leaders of it, a man named Yarosh, said he dreams of killing Jews, quote unquote, he dreams of killing Jews and Russians every day. And this is the kind of a guy in a high position in the Ukrainian government. This is one of Obama's new friends, and he's allied with another guy named Parabee. Arami Parabee, they're both part of this system. Parabee, I get the parties mixed up. I think he's a Svoboda Party co-founder. I'm sorry, a fatherland, Nazis, fatherland, mm-hmm. fatherland mm-hmm. A party co-founder. I think it's now called Svoboda, a militant neo-Nazi extremist, absolutely extremist, completely ideologically over-the-top fascist. He's in charge of national security, a very powerful ministry. He literally has the power to unleash the police, to unleash security forces, and he's allied with a very, very extremist defense secretary. And this goes on and on and on. These are the people that are running Ukraine. The prime minister, Yatsenyuk. Names get very, very tough. Tongue twisters, a lot of them.
One more name.
The president. Another neo-Nazi. The president, a guy named, there's one guy named Tanibok, who's the Svoboda leader. Taniyuk, I believe his name is. Taniyuk. Mm-hmm. The president. Mm-hmm. The coup-appointed president. The coup-appointed prime minister. The coup-appointed all these other people. Extremists, fascists, neo-Nazis. These are Obama's new friends.
That's the point. That's what I'm so glad you ended by saying that. Because this is what we need to understand. You know, I read the American vomit media. I read it. Because I need to know what the latest vomit is. And the irony is that the U.S. media actually is inferring that it is the Russians who are somehow involved with these neo-Nazis, when in fact it is just the opposite. It is the Russians and particularly the people on eastern Ukraine who are opposing it, not only eastern Ukraine, but they are opposing it. But what we get over here in this vomit that they dare to call news, quote unquote, is the absolute opposite of reality. And these are Obama's friends, new or otherwise. They've always been about Mr. Drone Man, hope and change, president, if you will. They have always been this man's friend, because this man does not represent, this man meaning Barack Obama and his many minions, do not represent the interests of everyday, ordinary, struggling people. The fact of the matter is, it's not only about the extermination, if you will, of the Jewish people. It's about the extermination of just everyday, ordinary, struggling people of all ethnicities, including Russian ethnicity. And, you know, this is what our despicable so-called news media, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, PBS, all of them are playing the harp for, if you will. They are all following in one form or another the line, if you will, of the Obama, Biden, Susan Rice, regime. They are all following the same dance. And we need to understand that this is not, you know, I would ask all Americans to pull out your books on geography. Look at where Ukraine geographically is located vis-a-vis where Russia is. Look at it. Ask yourselves, why are we even there? Ask yourselves, you know, we can overthrow governments in Iran as they did back in the 50s. We can overthrow governments, you know, in other parts of the world, specifically South America, Africa, et cetera. But whenever it comes to supporting the real needs of the people, the United States repeatedly, be it Democrat or Republican Party, Republicrats are always allied with the fascists. And that's who Barack Obama and his minions are allied with. Notwithstanding Obama's lies, this government, which is not even the people's government of the United States, this government is allied with blatant neo-Nazi fascists. We should ask ourselves, what the hell is going on, and why are we, the American people, tolerating this?
Well, I agree. The dismissiveness of the U.S. public, so different than what I remember in the 1960s and 1970s, Larry, during the civil rights struggles of the 60s, during the 70s, before the war ended in April of 1975. I remember all of that so vividly. But, of course, there's a big difference between now and the couple. Well, there were major differences between now and then. We had a draft in the military. We don't have a draft today. We have sort of an unofficial draft because the economy is so bad, completely different from back then, at least in the 60s. It started getting sour a little bit in the 70s, but there was a draft then. Today, young kids go into the military to get a job, and because they hear the siren song about all the promises they're going to get, and then they lie to and find out that most of them get nothing when they come out. Even if they're injured, they get rotten medical care. I've sat with Vietnam vets at the VA in Chicago. Really a very disturbing experience to go through, Larry. It's been a long time since I've done that. I'm getting off what I wanted to say, but it's very disturbing to do that. I chatted with them. I'm a vet myself from the 1950s, but I wasn't in war. But just talking with them, not about Vietnam, just in general, just chit-chatting, waiting for to be called for our appointment. In my case, I wanted to get a prescription filled, and I don't know what they were there for, but you could see it in their sad eyes, in their body language. They just didn't act like ordinary people, and it was the experience, even many years later after Vietnam, that destroyed them emotionally. They just weren't the same kind of people, and that's exactly what's happening to many, many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of U.S. forces that get sent to these imperial wars today. And I jumped off what I wanted to say, but the horrors of what America is allied with, including what's going on in Ukraine, I completely forgot the point that I wanted to make. Something else popped into my mind, and I know one thing I wanted to say. This has happened a few times before. I quickly answered an email I got from a wonderful Russian news service, RAI Novosti. They've asked me several times before if I would comment in writing about issues that they raised. In all cases, it was about Ukraine. They did it three times before, and they published it. And I just got an email. They did it yesterday. I'm sorry, 2 days ago, I believe it was. And they just did it now, wanting me to comment again about Ukraine. And they asked me either to send a written comment. They want to talk about Obama claiming Russia violated the four-party agreement that was consummated a few days ago in Geneva. Well, Russia violated nothing. Washington violated it. The Ukraine government violated it literally straight away. I wrote an article about it that literally the ink on the agreement wasn't even dry, and the Kiev government violated the agreement. So I definitely want to comment on that. They asked me either send them an email or they'll interview me on air. I sent them an email saying I'll be happy to write something, and I'll let you jump on with some comments, Larry. I'll send them another one and say I would love to comment if they would call me, so maybe I'll get a chance to do it verbally.
Well, I hope you will do it both in writing and verbally. I think that what we need to understand is everything that we are told. And I said everything. That's right, and I meant to say it. Everything that we are told by this government, I will not say our government because it is no longer our government. Everything we are told by this U.S. government is a lie. It is couched in lies. It is based on lies. And this, of course, is why Barack H. Obama was installed to begin with. Okay? For one thing, he was put there to divert the attention of the people in this nation to the dire, dire, and increasingly dire economic, social, and political problems that we are facing in this country. But he was also put there to be the empire, the U.S. empires, and it's not our empire. It's the power elite's empire. He was put there to serve their interests, not our interests. So what we're seeing currently in Ukraine, and I bring up Venezuela and I bring up other countries as well, because it's the same old story. And in some respects, here in the year of 2014, it is even worse. We have this colored leader of the empire speaking in terms that are absolutely and sickeningly hilarious to everybody else in the world who knows that what he is saying is utter nonsense. But in this country, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, PBS, all of them pretend that somehow there is some kind of legitimacy to it. And when I think of the people of Ukraine, the people of Iran, the people, everyday ordinary struggling people in Venezuela, and all over the world, in Palestine, my heart cries out in pain, in rage, in anger, and quite frankly, in determination to dismantle this empire. This country has well over 800, probably over 1,000, but definitely over 800 military bases around Mother Earth, around this globe. Why in the hell would we, the so-called bastion of democracy, have Roman-style outposts all over this world, if not to control and dominate and make sure that the interests of everyday, ordinary, struggling people of all colors are not served? That's what the empire is about. That's what Obama is about, and all of his Democrat and Republican Party minions are about. We need to be honest with ourselves. We need to say, look, Ukraine is but another example of an ongoing genocidal imperialistic plan to make sure that the struggling people, just everyday ordinary people like me and you, Stephen, don't have a chance. Well, I believe in this. I believe that with all of its weaknesses and failures that this country has had, and we've had many, I still believe in that phrase in the United States Constitution called, we the people. I believe in that, and I believe that we have to make it real. So, you know, as I say in Intrepid Report, whom I write for, .com, Intrepid Report, it's about everyday ordinary people, each one reach one, each one teach one. And I just feel so strongly about this. I feel so strongly. They try to divert us color-wise, racial-wise, gender-wise. They try to divert us every way they can, just so long as we don't look at who the real bloodsuckers are. I'm sorry, I got a little carried away.
Oh, I get carried away all the time, Larry. I think we need to get carried away because the situation is so grave. It really is so grave. I never in my entire life, I've been around a while. My God, I'll be going into my ninth decade this summer. So I remember the Cold War so well. I remember it in the pre-television days. I remember FDR very, very vaguely. Certainly I remember Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower and Jack Kennedy. And things just went downhill steadily from there, from Johnson. I mean, even Carter. I found nothing admirable about his presidency. He may be the best, a former U.S. president. He probably is, certainly a living one. I don't know of another one that's done some of the things he's done, but he's still part of the system. He's still part of the empire. He'll go so far and no further, but once you get past him, you get to Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 2, Clinton, Obama. And imagine this for 2016, the presidential race, Larry. Hillary Clinton, an unindicted war criminal versus, oh my God, another Bush, Jeb Bush. If I was, mm-hmm. I mean, how can you make a prediction this early ahead? But if I was going to chance a guess and say who'll be the nominees, I would say you can put it down. Don't take it to the bank, but you can put it down and you can say you heard it here first. Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush. Oh my God. I'm going to move to Moscow.
Well, it's called devil versus devil. All right. It's not even devil versus worse devil. It's devil versus devil. They both are equally evil, sinister, and blood-sucking, you know, parasites. And, you know, Hillary Clinton. She is a war criminal. Jeb Bush, you must be kidding. But unfortunately, you're not. So the fact of the matter is, and I say this, and I said this back in 07, in 2007, I'm saying it now in 2014, get away from this plantation of the Democrats and Republicans. It's a plantation. And what does that mean? That means that as long as we're on this plantation, all of us, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, all of us are slaves, slaves. And as Harriet Tubman said, I repeat her words, you know, I could have freed 1,000 more slaves. If only they had known, if only they knew they were slaves. Well, it's time for us to wake up and understand that we in this nation have become slaves to the corporate stream vomit, slaves to a government that we do not control, we do not own. It is not our government. They commit horrendous war crimes all over Mother Earth, all over this planet, in our name. We must say no to both Democrats and Republicans. Did I say both? Maybe I should have said one, because they're really joined at the hip. Whether it's in 2016, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush or whomever the power elite decides it will be, we have to say no. So I just really would urge our listeners, and I want to thank our listeners for listening to your wonderful program and for tolerating me. I want to say to our listeners, please wake up. Wake up. I know you're awake. Then go out and wake up other people, whether they like it or not, as we used to say back in the day in the Black Panther Party, whether they like it or not. Wake up and understand that we have got to bring about systemic change if we're going to stop this insanity and if we're going to stop thermonuclear war.
Larry, you're an honored guest, and your passion is extraordinary on the right side of the most important issues. And do we ever need an overdose of that today. Literally, our future is in our own hands. People don't realize the power they have, but they have to use it. There's a lot of expressions that I've used over the years that I've been writing. It is not that many. I only began writing accidentally at age 70, so I've only been doing it almost 9 years now in retirement. I never planned it. I never imagined it. I'm working on my fourth book. I mean, this stuff seems all surreal to me. I mean, absolutely incredible. Extraordinary people that I have on this program as guests, distinguished figures, distinguished academics, and other people like you, Larry. I mean, I'm literally proud to consider them and to call them my friends, and they feel the same about me. They treat me. I mean, there's this, some of them are world figures, and they treat me as an equal. Absolutely astonishing. I get asked to go over some of the stuff that they're putting out to suggest any comments I might want to make. Maybe I can say something to improve what they've done. Well, some of these people are absolutely brilliant. I mean, my goodness, I feel like a pygmy in the land of the giants stacking up against some of them. And I really mean that. And it's such an honor to have this program, to be able to be with people like this on air. And I remember when I accidentally first became a radio host on a startup operation, and that was in, oh my goodness, I think it was around February 2007, if I remember, either 2006 or 2007, and an individual who I got to know became the first host on this program, and he asked me whether I would be interested in being a host. And I think back at that moment, Larry, I said yes, before my brain registered, and I said to myself, what in the heck did I do? What do I know? I mean, I barely know what it's like to be a guest. And the first time I was ever asked to be a guest, not too long before that, I almost declined, thinking I'd make a fool of myself on air. But a couple of good friends said, oh, no, you go on, and you'll do just fine. And after about a minute of nervousness, I settled down, and I absolutely loved it for about 45 minutes. And I hoped that the guests for the next hour with the same host might not have shown up, so I could have had another hour. But I literally never looked back from that time being a guest. And it was almost that way being a host, where I accepted it, maybe foolishly, not foolishly as it turned out, but I absolutely wondered what the devil I did hosting a program. What did I know about hosting a program? But I did it. I was the second host on this startup. I started very slowly getting friends, activist friends, to come on as guests. And I remember the first big time guest that I had on my program. I remember it was in May, because it was the same day that I was asked to give a talk in Chicago, and it overlapped my own program. I was being picked up outside where I lived, driven to the place where I would give a talk with a couple of other people. It was on Israel-Palestine, and we had a couple of hours where we went on, and I had John Pilger on. John Pilger was my guest that day. He was the first major world figure that I had on my program, and I'll never forget that time. And John, supremely cordial man. He's been on my program once in a while. He spends the summers, which is the winters in the West, in Australia. And I just contacted him recently to come on my program, but he's still in Western Australia, he said. This was just about a week ago. He's in Western Australia filming. He said, get back to him. He'll come back to England maybe sometime in May. So in the weeks ahead, I'll contact him again, and I'll get him back on this program again. He's a marvelous guest. He writes occasional articles. He does extraordinary documentaries. He does them on the big issues. He says what people need to know. And he's a wonderful man. I've read about half a dozen of his books, and one of them I reviewed. It's the last book he wrote. I asked him if he's planning another book. I think he's too busy making documentaries. But the last book was called Freedom Next Time. So in other words, wow, people that are deeply repressed in countries that he discussed, including South Africa, including Russia, economically, even after apartheid in South Africa, the economic repression, even under Mandela, yes, very sadly, was absolutely terrible. And he wrote an article later about it. I think the title was something to the effect that apartheid never ended. Well, right, it's really so, because conditions there are worse now than during the apartheid years. That's really right. A terrible system. Russia hasn't recovered from the shock therapy 1990s. He wrote about India. His biggest chapter was on Israel-Palestine, a major chapter on that. And again, marvelous, marvelous writing. And it's really an honor for me to have him and others like him on this program.
Well, you know, when you speak of John Pilger, I think of the film that I was delighted and honored to be in with him, a documentary film called Lifting the Veil. It's on Metanoia Films, M-E-T-A-N-O-I-A, metanoiafilms.com. It's called Lifting the Veil. I hope the audience will check it out. But John, among other people, was in that film, including myself, in that documentary film. And he made it quite clear, as he continues to do, what we are really up against, what we are really doing or having to do, and why we have to do this, and we have to do it now. So, you know, if anyone hasn't seen the film, I would urge them to, you can actually find it online. Go to Metanoia Films, M-E-T-A-N-O-I-A, Metanoia Films. It's called Lifting the Veil. Click on it. You can actually watch it online. It's also on CD, on DVD, of course. But, yeah, I have an enormous amount of respect for John Pilger. He was also one of the very few people back in 07 and 08 who said to folks, hey, what do you know about this Barack Obama? Who is he? Do you know he worked for such and such firm? Do you know what his interests are, economic, political, and social interests? Do you know? He was one of the very few. I am very pleased to say that I, too, was among those few. But, yes, and you know, I do know, my brother Stephen, that you have had enormously well-known guests on your show, on Progressive Radio Network, on your specific show on PRN. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know if any of us really ever sat down and said, well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. It sort of was thrust upon us because we realized we had to do certain things, Stephen. We had to. If our very humanity was at stake, we had to do it. And that's what you did. You said, okay, I'm going to do this. Haven't done it before. Well, I'm going to do it now. And you know what? You've done it damn well better than 99.9% of so many others and 100% of the corporate stream media. So I want to thank you, my brother. I want to say kudos to you and to those like you who have had the courage, the determination, and the integrity to stand up and be for real. I thank you, Stephen.
Well, Larry, you're very, very kind. I mean, you've been on the front lines of this battle longer than I have. I was not on the front line. I was always concerned. I had my own thoughts. I followed more or less what was going on. I think I had a rough understanding of what was going on. I hadn't connected the dots the way I did in retirement. When I retired at the end of the 1990s, I didn't want to go fishing. I was so traveled out that the idea of even taking a vacation and checking into another hotel and going through another airport, the idea, it just left me stone cold. I was so happy just to be able to stay home, and I would tell friends that my favorite hotel is inside my front door, and my favorite restaurant is in my kitchen, and I really meant it. And then I accidentally began writing and doing media work and the rest, and I got obsessed with it, and it literally is my everyday passion, 7 days a week, holidays included, on my birthday, on Christmas, on New Year's. If anybody wants to interview me on Christmas or New Year's or Thanksgiving, I am available because this is what I do. What am I going to do, sit around all day and watch television? I can't imagine doing anything like that. I simply can't imagine it. And even at my age, and I don't move around as swiftly as I used to, I mean, the body, you get older, and the body just doesn't work the way it used to. Everybody, if they live long enough, will find that out sooner or later. We're just another machine, and we wear out slowly, and I'm wearing out a little bit, and I certainly can feel it. I can't leap tall buildings with a single bound anymore, Larry. And for sure, I'm not faster than a steam bullet or more powerful than a locomotive. but I sure give it my damnedest. And I don't jump out of bed as easily as I used to in the morning. But when I wake up in the morning, I literally look forward to doing what I do every morning, have breakfast, do some exercises, and get right into my day, starting off with my due diligence. What are the big things that I want to go, want to discuss? I know Ukraine is going to be one of them because there's always something important happening. I've missed only one day in over the past 2 months writing about Ukraine. And then I just look forward to getting through with all of the stuff I have to do, breakfast, exercises, take a shower, and jump right into my day after my due diligence and start writing. And I do it until I grind down later in the day. And if I'm lucky, I've done two articles, and once in a while, I get three done. Yesterday, I did three, Larry.
Wow.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Can I mention the third one that I put out, a completely different topic?
Yes.
I wrote about a possible PLO, Hamas detente. In other words, there's been disunity between these two groups. Hamas controls the West. Hamas is the democratically elected government of Palestine. January 2006, a decisive majority of the Palestinian vote. The so-called Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, Israel rigged his election. I wrote about it. I wrote about it in detail once. I repeated it in sketchier form several times. His term ran out in January 2009. He only had a 5-year term, so he stuck around for 10 years. He was illegitimate from day one. He certainly is illegitimate today. He's been a longtime Israeli collaborator, and now he's consummated a deal with Hamas for unity, where there were several previous attempts. The most notable ones were in Cairo in 2011, in Doha, Qatar in 2012. Nothing of what was agreed on was implemented. And I asked in my article, is this time different? It takes a giant leap of faith to believe it. The proof is in the pudding, Larry. I'll believe it when I see it. But Hamas is a legitimate government of all of Palestine, not just Gaza, but you'd never know it by the scoundrel media reports, by what comes out of official reports from Washington, from Western governments, from Israel. Mm-hmm. So now we have this situation. The news broke yesterday. I really get an article about out on a topic the same day, but I did it on this one. I wasn't sure if I'd get it done, but if I was able to get it done, I got it done fairly late. A little bit later than I usually write. I was a little tired, but I pressed myself. I got it done. It was a longer article than I thought. I thought it would end up being a short one, but it turned out about 1,500 words, and I could have covered more in it. There was really more I wish I had discussed, but I got it as much as I could, as long as my energy held out, and I wanted to get it out. It's on my blog site. It's called PLO/Hamas detente with a question mark. I thought about doing a follow-up article, but I really have had to repeat most of what I said, so I haven't done it. I'll watch events as they unfold ahead, and I'll say something about them as things, depending on the way events unfold. But I honestly don't expect anything from this. Abbas is, I believe, 79 years old. He's just about my age, so we're pushing 80 years old. He's come to the end of a long career in his case. He doesn't want. I asked in the article, is he risking Netanyahu killing him the way Ariel Sharon killed Yasser Arafat? Yasser Arafat was poisoned, was murdered by Israel. Does he want to risk the same thing? Maybe he's senile and doesn't really see the handwriting on the wall if he goes along with this. But this is the issue I wanted to raise. I wrote about it. It's a big issue because it would be wonderful if we had Palestinian unity to stand up against Israel. We certainly need that. Oh, my God, we're at the end of the hour, Larry. Quick 10-second thought.
Well, I just want to say, if you call yourself retired, then damn it, we need a lot more retired people just like you. You're not retired. You've only just begun to fight. I thank the listeners. I love you, Steve. Take care.
Thank you, Larry. I look forward to getting you back. I'm going to get an interview on RAI Novosti right after this program. They're going to call me from Moscow. Once I get done with that, I'll send you an email.
All right. Take care, my brother.
Thanks, Larry. We'll be pre-recording Thursday to Friday. We'll be right back.